And
good morning, Chair.
Morning, Chairperson.
Thank you for joining us this morning. How are you?
Good, good. Chair.
Thank you, Nati Monu and Ndendin. Lendo ka virtual.
Anshlan, kunjalo sisentendeni vele.
Yes. No, I think it's now 3 minutes past 10, and I just want to check if the AG is already connected so that we can start with this meeting.
Honorable Chair, yes, the AG is represented in the meeting.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Honorable members, I want to take this opportunity to welcome you in this meeting of the Select Committee on Public Enterprises and Communications. And this is one of the meetings that had been scheduled for this period of the year so that we can hear from the AG. And I also want to take this opportunity to welcome the AG's office for responding positively to our invitation. I therefore wish to say the meeting is now duly opened, and I will then, as you have seen the agenda, that we only have this item today. However, the housekeeping rules apply, and this sitting is therefore in line with the prescripts of any other sitting which would have been occurring within the parliamentary precinct. So all the rules apply. I just want now to check if we have any apologies as per the agenda which was shared with you, honorable members. Do we have any apologies?
Chairperson?
Yes, sir.
Good morning. There is an apology from Member Makausi. Thank you.
The apology from the Honorable Makausi is duly noted. Thank you, Honorable Arnold.
Sorry, Chair. I also have an apology for Mr. Nyambi.
The apology from the Honorable Nyambi is also noted. Any further apology? No further apology. Thank you very much. Those are the apologies. They are noted and registered. And I think without any further ado, I want to take this opportunity to invite the AG to make its representation to the committee for the consideration of this committee. And then we will take matters from there once we have had the appreciation of what is going to be presented to us. I'm going to ask the leader of the delegation from the AG's office to introduce the delegation, and if also there is any apology on that part. We always appreciate here in Parliament that the leaders of these institutions, they lead their own delegation. But in the event that it so happened that on this particular day, their diary was not allowing for them to be here, then they must give that apology and actually indicate why the leader of the institution is not here, you know, herself, so to say. So you will indicate, but we really appreciate that you have responded to our invite. However, as I say, please do give context if the AG herself is not here. And thank you very much. And then you will also tell us your designation. I now give you the floor. Thank you.
No, thank you so much, Honorable Chair. And maybe let me start by greeting the committee and the honorable members. And thank you again for the opportunity to be able to come and brief this committee on the SOEs that fall under the Department of Public Enterprises. Chair, indeed, the Auditor General is not with us here today. To start off with, let me introduce myself. My name is Madidima Losingo. I am a business unit leader for the business unit that oversees the Department of Public Enterprises together with other portfolios and specifically in the Department of Public Enterprises as it relates today. We will then be sharing with you the audit outcomes for the SOEs that fall within that portfolio. So in my capacity today, I'm leading the team, and we, as indicated before, we oversee the portfolio that leads the Department of Public Enterprise. A chair with me today is, and I'm hoping that the colleagues that I'm with will be able to switch on their cameras as I introduce them. The first person that is with us today is Pumulani Rabola. Pumulani is the Deputy Business Unit Leader. Sorry, Deputy Business Unit Leader, that's correct, that oversees the Department of Public Enterprises. And for the CFMA cycle, he was actually leading the teams that were conducting the audits that fall under this portfolio. I'm also going to introduce Nomthanda Zondlovu. Nomthanda, if you can also just switch on your camera as well. She is also a Deputy Business Unit Leader in the same business unit. I also have with me Mudie Skosana. Mudie is also an Acting Deputy Business Unit Leader, and specifically she was responsible for leading the team on the Transnet audit in this particular PFMA cycle. I also do have Bong Musa. Bong Musa is the senior manager in the office of the Auditor General, and he will also be supporting us here today. Team, I'm hoping that I've introduced everybody and there's nobody that I've left out. So Chair, this is the team that for this PFMA cycle has led the audits of the different SOEs in the cycle. Okay. Ordinarily, when it comes to audit outcomes, as the audit teams that have led this audit on the ground, we do normally brief the committees around the audit outcomes, specifically focusing on what has been the drivers of the audit outcomes that we see for this entities, as well as specifically having discussions around what is it that can be done to support these entities in terms of improving these audit outcomes. And more specifically, as we do this engagement at the backdrop of us engaging the different committees of Parliament, we are really focusing on the fact that it is critical for the state-owned entities to be able to deliver on their mandate, primarily because they are critical to the sustainability of our economy and to ensuring that there is indeed service delivery that is happening to the ordinary citizens of South Africa. So as we share the audit outcomes with you here today, we've shared them as well with the different accounting authorities and accounting offices. We've shared these outcomes with the minister as well. We've shared the recommendations as well in terms of what we believe as the Auditor General will really assist those entities to be able to achieve clean administration. And we know that clean administration is actually critical for ensuring
recording
that,
in progress.
Sorry, we do know that clean administration is actually critical for ensuring that ultimately there is a good foundation for ensuring that there is ultimately service delivery. So as we share these messages with you today, we have also highlighted some key recommendations that we believe in our words as the Auditor General, we can support this committee in terms of this recommendation so that they can in turn ensure that there is that oversight and monitoring that is taking place to ensure that there is ultimately service delivery as it relates to this entity. I'll pause here, Chair, and Pumulani is going to be leading us in terms of the presentation that we will be sharing with you today. And with your permission, Chair, I would hand over to him to lead us in this part of the engagement. Thanks, Chair.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning to the honourable members of the committee. Good morning to my colleagues from the AGSA and other people present today. Just a moment, Chair, as I share the presentation on the screen. I hope the presentation is showing, Honourable Chair, on the screen. Just a bit of context. You did invite us to engage with the committees with the specific on the topic of speed capture on and on what the committee can do to improve oversight in response to what the entities have gone through under the period of speed capture, or in result in response to the observations, findings, and the recommendations that come from the Speed Capture Commission of Inquiry report. The Speed Capture Commission report revealed instances of steady decline in the quality and the effectiveness of governance in some public enterprises. And during that period, governance was characterized by acts of non-compliance, corruption, and fraud, according to what the Speed Capture Commission of Inquiry has found. So we therefore cannot talk about the recommendations of the Speed Capture Commission without reflecting on what we do as the AGSA. It is in this context that the presentation that we share with you, it is mostly focused on what are we seeing through our audits or audit outcome, and what do we recommend in line with that, because our audits look at the fair presentation of financial statements or credibility of financial statements, credibility of the performance report, whether the institutions are characterized by a culture of compliance with laws and regulation, and internal controls, including the governance and internal control environment. And those are the areas that were weak, or found to have been weak, or enabling the acts of non-compliance, corruption, or fraud that has happened as identified by the Federal Commission of Inquiry. So it is in that context here that you see more our presentation is mostly focused on the audit observations rather than a specific reference to what was found in the Speed Capture Commission report. So that is what we can be able to advise in line with that. And the key thing to note, Chair, is that only a culture of accountability can improve service delivery. Only a culture of accountability will improve the value creation to the citizens of the country. And it is a message that you see that across the presentation, we do emphasize on this message that everyone has a role to play in the ecosystem to ensure that there's accountability. Those who have been appointed as public managers, they have a responsibility to ensure that their primary focus is on creating value for the citizens of South Africa. And I'm not going to dwell on this slide because what Matt Dimano has already touched specifically on what this slide here that touches on our mission and the vision and what we're here to do today. However, here it's important to maybe dwell a little bit on this slide and relating it again to what have been the observations of the Speed Capture Commission of Inquiry, in that the Commission's observations and recommendations validated our desire to shift the current public sector culture through insights and influence to one of performance, accountability, transparency, and integrity. And this links currently with the new long-term strategy of the AGSA, in that we need to shift the current public sector culture if we're to improve performance of this and the governance of these public sector institutions. And to do that, it does not require that the agency do its work, but requires that everyone in the accountability ecosystem achieves that. So in this regard, success will be dependent on are the public managers, officials of these departments doing their part, the members of the committees of governance committees within these departments and entities doing their part, are the executive authorities doing their part, and is are the members of parliament coming to, together in terms of the effective oversight of these institutions. And that is when every part of the ecosystem, when it's working, that's when we'll be able to see real value creation for the citizens of the country. And also, it's also important to note that the Commission spent a significant amount of time on assessing the quality of parliamentary oversight and determining whether oversight failures could have contributed or aided state capture. It's in this regard that we noted that this assessment revealed a number of oversight failures and made recommendations on how to address those failures with a view of protecting the Republic against future instances of state capture or other maladministration. And it's on this, also in this context, that as part of our presentation, we do make recommendations to management of the entities that we've audited, executive authorities, and also to the oversight committees, including the Senate committee, in terms of what is it that can be done to try and improve the observation that we'll be sharing today. So the entities that fall under our portfolio and which we'll be touching on from the message today are shown on the screen right now, and these are the entities that are under the Department of Public Enterprises. We did not include, we understand this, that this lead committee also looks at communication, which will cover SABC as well. So we did not include SABC. It is outside our portfolio, and we understand that it has been clarified with the committee secretariat beforehand that we will only focus on the DPE and its entities. So just a starting point, the current administration took over in 2019, and they inherited a picture as shown there in terms of how the audit outcome will look in this particular portfolio. At that particular point in 2018-2019, the Department of Public Enterprises was sitting on what we call a clean audit, that their financial statements were free from material misstatements, their performance report was free from material misstatements, and we had not identified material instances of non-compliance. We therefore also had three entities that were sitting at what we call qualified audits. Qualified means the financial statements contained some material misstatements, and that was the Transnet, Safcon, and Eskom. There was also three audits that were disclaimed, and that was Genel, Alexco, and also SA Express. Disclaimed means that we could not make sense of the financial statements, or the financial statements are not sufficiently supported by underlying records or supporting information. And there was only one outstanding audit at that particular time, which was SAA. Yes, that was the time when it was starting with the process of going to business risk. So that was the picture that the current administration inherited at that time. We are tracking this to see what progress has then been made since then. Currently, we are sitting at no entity is sitting under clean. The department has lost their clean audit. They lost it in the previous 2 years. The Transnet has managed to improve from a qualified audit to unqualified, so as a Safcon, but both still have findings under compliance, and that's they're sitting under the amber, yellow. We are concerned with the increased number of outstanding audits, which is SAA, ASA Express, Genel, and Eskom, and Alexcom. So we'll touch on the reasons why these entities are currently outstanding. So SAA recently came out of business rescue. They have been embarking on a process of restarting the entity, as we know that the entity is now flying again. they recently submitted financial statements. So the financial statements for the group were submitted on 31 May this year. And those are the financial statements for the past 4 years, which we need to audit. However, they only submitted the financial statements for SAA Technical, their major subsidiary, and also Ashes, another subsidiary. Those also were only submitted in August. So we could not start the audit before the financial statements are submitted because they have a material impact on the group financial statements. It was going to be meaningless for us to start with the audit then in May when the AFS are submitted for the group. So we only started the audit in August and the audit is progressing. It is worth noting, Chair, that the AFS for Mango, another major subsidiary, has not yet been submitted. As we know that that subsidiary is still, it has its own business rescue proceeding undergoing. And the management of the SAA, the holding company, they are currently engaging with the business rescue practitioner and the CEO of Mango to try and get the financial statement prepared and submitted for auditing. But we've since continued to do the audit of the other subsidiaries and the holding company. SAA Express, still outstanding. We are not expecting AFS here because this entity has since been liquidated. So that is the reason why the audit has not happened. Denel has also been outstanding for the past 2 years, 2020-2021, 2021-2022 financial statements are outstanding. There is a commitment that the entity will submit financial statements by the 30th of November, next month. And we have been engaging the entity, monitoring their progress in preparation of the financial statements. And we are hopeful that they will submit and we can comment with the audit. But the financial statements that they will submit are only for the previous year, which is 2020-21. They said for the 2021-22, they will only submit them in February or March next year. However, it's worth noting and highlighting, Chair, that these outstanding financial statements means the entity is currently contravening both the PFMA and the Companies Act. And it's important to highlight this contravention because this entity is not currently in business rescue and it's not currently undergoing liquidation. It is still an operational entity. Yes, there are serious operational challenges and liquidity challenges, but because the entity is operating, compliance with the PFMA and the Companies Act is very important. So hence we are highlighting that the failure to submit the AFS is contravening the Companies Act. There have been compliance notices that have been sent to the entity by the CIPC, notifying them that their financial statements have been outstanding beyond the term limits that are allowed by the Companies Act, and the board has responded to those. ESCOM is not our audit, it's the audit of Deloitte. However, we are close to the audit. We do monitor the audit and the work done by Deloitte. And through those monitoring activities, we have noted that the audit will only get completed according to the current timelines by the end of November. So hence, the audit outcome are not included in this current slide. ALESCO also is still outstanding. The audit has not commenced. They only signed off, the previous year audit was only signed off in March this year. The entity has submitted financial statements to us, the AGSA, but their process of reappointing their auditors took much longer than anticipated, and that process is still being finalized, hence the audit has not commenced. So, stepping off the audit come and just looking into the performance of these entities in this portfolio, it's important to step back and say, what is it that this portfolio had committed to do? The cabinet revised the medium-term strategic framework in 2019 and defined the key strategic interventions or priorities that they want to focus on for the first year of the current administration. And in here, Chair, we have just highlighted three of them. And the reason to highlight them is just to remind the committee to say, as we are monitoring the performance of this portfolio, we need to then go back and say, but what is it that at a high level, at a cabinet level, had we committed, or what are the commitments that we want to achieve? The current performance, the current plans, are they aligned with that which was planned to achieve according to the MTSM? because if there is misalignment, it will come 2024, it means that we will not have done enough to achieve those targets. So in here, we have just highlighted the three interventions, among other interventions that are touched on this portfolio. There was a target that government wanted to repropose SOEs to strengthen governance systems and ensure stability of the board of directors of these entities. The target was that by the end of last year, the annual scorecard on the repurposing of the SOEs would be in place. There were also, it was also targeted that the main infrastructure of the SOEs that are repurposed would be in place by end of March this year, 2022. We want to highlight, Chair, that there is a misalignment between the DPE's annual performance plan and that particular strategic target from the NTSSF, that the DPE performance targets did not include targets relating to this repurposing of SOEs. Hence, it's important that as the committee engage with DPE, there need to be questions asked in terms of the DPE. So what is the reason for this misalignment and what needs to be done to ensure that there is realignment, to ensure this commitment that they have made is actually delivered upon. There was another intervention that we have noted, which is the relation to the separation and bundling of ESCOM. That one will be reflected upon as the audit of ESCOM is completed, because it is the process that is being undertaken within ESCOM as an entity in consultation with Cabinet. So the reflection and our insight on this one, we'll touch on it when the audit is completed. And then another one linked to Transnet, which is about reducing costs for priority sectors by increasing efficiencies of our ports. And the target there was Transnet TNPA to be corporatized by end of March 2022-2023. We have noted that this one is in progress. The president did announce earlier this year the corporatization of this entity. And the Transnet is busy in the process of putting together the governance structures and including the board of that entity to ensure that it becomes now a legal entity that is a legal entity that is also just a standalone subsidiary of Transnet. We have then also looked at the reported performance of these entities that we've audited, DPE, Transnet, and Safcon. And we looked at overall, how is their achievement of their own targets looking like? And this is in terms of what they've reported themselves. DPE have reported 91% achievement. Transnet is a concerning 39% achievement of targets, while Safcon has reported 86% of targets. So we then need to look at what are the reasons for Transnet achieving so low. And we noted that Transnet's difficulties to meet its targeted rail capacity slowdown, economic activities. And there's a concern that bulk commodity miners like iron ore, coal, and chrome lost billions of rand in export revenues. Consequently, possible losses to the fiscals of billions in terms of corporate tax. So there's really a need to stabilize those operations of Transnet as far as rail availability of rail network is concerned, to ensure that it's not just about the collection of corporate tax, but it's about the facilitation of economic activity, because we're talking about economic infrastructure and the weaknesses in there that are not working effectively, leading to this entity not achieving its targets. So this slide it's a summary of just two key indicators that we've selected from the annual performance report of these two entities, Transnet and Safcon, which just indicate some of the areas where the entities are not achieving their targets. We did not take all of them. There are others that didn't achieve, but we just said, as an example of where these entities not achieving the target, let's let some just one each. And we have noted that Transnet had targeted that they are going to move 208 megatons of outdoor rail volumes. They only achieved 173 of those. And the reasons are noted there on the side in terms of the operational challenges that affected Transnet including the increase in security-related incidents, mainly capital theft, vandalizing of rail and pipeline infrastructure, and also IT security challenges and the impact of the July KZN unrest last year have affected the operations of the port and the rail operations. So these are some of the reasons why they were unable to achieve this thing, because it led to a very high number of trains that were train trips that were cancelled, about 4,000 of them that were cancelled in the performance year. At SAFCOAL, there is this project that they have been planning over the years, which is about the refurbishment of the Timber Dollar sawmill. This project was not achieved. They did not implement this thing, and the reason that they have given as management was that the business case and the person recommending a feasible operation option was not finalized. There's a new strategy that no longer considers a strategic partner that they're looking at. So there are a lot of reasons that they're giving in terms of why they were not able to refurbish that particular Timber Dollar sawmill. That is the Limpopo. But we left management with some comments or recommendations, specifically on Transnet, that management should place emphasis on operational challenges that affect performance, particularly the availability of rolling stock, infrastructure maintenance, and other security issues, in order to enable the entity to deliver on its mandate of lowering the cost of doing business in South Africa. And this is very important, because it's not just about the entity's achieving objectives, it's about the entity enabling economic activity in the country. And the Transnet's ability to raise funds without government support remains commendable and a secret strength. And this is something that we also touch on in the few slides that follow around the financial viability. That it is notable that this entity is not 100% dependent on the state. They have been able to fund their own operations with those limited guarantees. So I think they are sitting at a 3.5 billion rand guarantee that has not been increasing over the years. So that is commendable. However, we say that they needed to address their core operational challenges to assist in boosting performance, realizing operating profits, and ultimately improving cash reserves. Because if they don't do this thing, they may end up knocking on the door of the state seeking financial assistance. In this portfolio, Honorable Chair and members, we did implement the new powers, as they are called, for the AGSA, the material irregularities. These were implemented at Transnet and also at SAFCOAL. We have identified some material irregularities in these two entities, but they were identified in the previous financial year, which is the 2020-21 financial year. They were all notified to the accounting authorities in August 2021. What we were doing in the current year, current audit, was to follow up on what the board of directors of this entity is doing in response to this material irregularities that were notified. Well, they are expected to implement effective steps to remedy the impact of these irregularities and stop the irregularities. And that's what we're doing in the current year. So just to go a bit deeper in these material irregularities, at Transnet we notified two. They're both related to one contract, which was the contract for the lease of heavy duty plant equipment, there were two non-compliance that were noted there, but both of them related to non-compliance with the PPPS Act. It talks to how they selected the winning bidders as they were awarding this contract. We found that there was non-compliance with the PPPS Act in this regard. We followed up in the current year and noted that the accounting authorities is busy in implementing effective steps in response to these two MIs. We have also noted that there are disciplinary steps that are being taken against employees, and those are still ongoing. At KLF, which is a major subsidiary of SAFCOAL, there was a material irregularity that was noted with regard to under estimation of provisional tax that attracted a penalty from SARS. So, you know, when you end up paying penalties from SARS, you're actually reducing money that's available for operations. Hence, we said this is a loss for the entity. The entity has been investigated, that particular MI. The investigation report was sent to the auditors, and then the audit team is currently still assessing the outcome of the investigation to determine whether, one, does it respond or address to the material that we reported, and two, whether it recommends steps that are going to be sufficient to address that particular material irregularity. Just to highlight a few our observations around the MI process in this portfolio, Chair, is that the transfer MIs are taking longer to finalize, and it's something that was kind of expected because it leads to the employee relation issues, where employees, in response to their own rights, they are also challenging or disputing or appealing the charges against them, and that process takes long. That is why we reported this MIs in 2021. And even now it's not yet finalized. But the recommendation that we can give to this select committee is that the committee should continue to perform oversight over the implementation of these commitments made by the accounting authorities in resolving these MIs. So basically it's about checking with the board in terms of the MIs reported by the agency, what are you doing about them. Stepping off the material irregularities, Chair, and moving into financial management and compliance, this is where we highlight governance issues now as they relate to how financial management is happening within these entities. We have noted that across all entities, there are instances or some weaknesses of in their governance and internal controls as they relate to financial management. Issues of proper record keeping at Transnet is really needs intervention, especially to relate to procurement transactions, because it takes time or a lot of mission to get documents as you were busy with the audit. A DP is also a bit of concern that they must take note of, and a staff call will be comfortable that record keeping is fine with them. Daily and monthly controls at Transnet, and these are the things that lead to the material misstatement that we need to be corrected on the financial statements. In year and year-end reporting, all three entities or auditors, we found that it's an area that needs to be monitored as it is concerning. And the reviewing of and monitoring of compliance is concerning at SAFCOL and it requires intervention at DPE and Transnet. We also just indicated that the financial statements submitted for auditing by SAFCOL, it's commendable that they gave us financial statements that were free from material misstatements. However, Transnet and DPE, their financial statements contained material misstatements. They had to amend the financial statements through the audit process for them to avoid the qualification. And the financial material statements that they had to amend, for DPE, it had to do with the completeness of the contingent liabilities. For Transnet, it had to do with investment properties or the fair value adjustments of investment properties, related party transaction disclosures, and also the disclosures of commitments. Those are the areas that they needed to correct. Otherwise, they would have been qualified had they not adjusted it for those. We did leave these entities with some recommendations that the audit committee and the internal audit must continue to exercise their roles of oversight by ensuring that the audit action plans are root cause-based. So they must look at what are the root causes of these weaknesses that we have identified, and they must make sure that they provide effective oversight over the implementation of those audit action plans. And oversight committees, including the select committee, should also continue to monitor these action plans presented by the accounting authority to assess progress on the action plans that have been put in place. That's the recommendation that we are leaving with the committee in this space. Just moving into the space of financial health, I did indicate in the previous two slides around Transnet, commending them for being able to sustain their operations without continuous government bailout or financial support, and highlighting the just a risk that they need to address their core operational challenges to assist in boosting performance and realization of operational profits to improve their cash reserves. However, the concerns or the challenges at DNL are seriously worrying, Chair. We have noted that the DPE has reported that they are working with DNL to implement a long-term terrorism plan that requires restructuring of the entity. So that's a long-term project. However, the company needs stability now. And we have noted that it appears that there are no clear plans to address the immediate liquidity requirements of that entity. Sorry about that. That resulted in DNL facing a number of court challenges during the previous year from suppliers and employees seeking to recover money owed to them. And as a result of this, because there was no immediate or action plans to address the challenges now, the DPE had to step in and advance money to DNL that was not budgeted. And that attracted unauthorized expenditure of 3.2 million rand. So they had a choice to either let the entity face these liquidity challenges or they had to make money available. And that is a result of not having plans to address the current liquidity challenges. And this is that needs to be addressed as a matter of urgency. As we express, noting that it has been liquidated, there is a concern around the mandate in which it was formed. And say, now that the entity has been liquidated, who is filling into that mandate? Because the NTL was formed to promote frequency of services on lower density routes and to expand regional air service connectivity and capability in South Africa. So its liquidation left that gap, which is yet to be filled in the market that it served. So the question is, what is government doing now to ensure that that developmental mandate of SAA Express still needs to be to be covered because it was about economic development? Mango Airlines, as we indicated, that it is currently undergoing business rescue, itself also had a developmental mandate, which was to cover or to service the low-cost traveler market. And we've noted that that market currently is underserviced. And again, it's for government to assess, are we comfortable with the current market, how it is played right now, or is there a need for government intervention in the particular market? Because that was a developmental mandate which was key in driving connections across the country for low-cost travelers and also in driving tourism. Government has indicated over the years under the current administration that they want to, the future of state-owned entities is under consideration. Hence, the president appointed the PSEC, which is the Presidential State-Owned Enterprises Council. And that council, they needed is assessing the future rationalization and the structure of this SOE, the value that they add. And they've indicated that the continued existence will be determined or informed by the value that each SOE adds to the OCREs and whether each SOE can be run sustainably without bailouts from the fiscals. We commend those particular reforms and we support those reforms, Chair. However, we have noted that there is slow progress in the implementation of those reforms. For example, the shareholder management bill that was supposed to inform how government is going to play a role in this SOE is yet to be finalized. And also a very key item, which is the funding criteria for these state-owned entities, is also yet to be finalized. And the funding criteria is something that government has announced themselves that they are working on a funding criteria, which will inform how does government fund state-owned entities. This is a policy decision that is currently outstanding, and it's creating policy uncertainty in the environment. Entities like DNL, they do not know where their next cash will come from, what they must do. And that also affects the entity's ability to attract talent and also to attract investment and partnership with the private sector, because there is this outstanding policy decision that creates uncertainty in the space. We also, just moving into the space of compliance as well, Chair, is that these entry institutions, as you've noted, that they all have instances of non-compliance that have been reported. DPE will identify non-compliance in the space of procurement and contract management and also in the quality of contract statement. Transnet will identify non-compliance in the space of procurement and contract management, quality of financial statements, prevention of irregular and unauthorized expenditure, and also effective consequence management. So, of course, it was only on effective consequence management. However, I just need to pause and highlight the exemption that was granted by the Minister of Finance to allow Transnet to move the disclosure of their financial, of their irregular expenditure from the financial statements to the annual report. That meant that all PSME required disclosures are no longer part of the IFRS financial statements, but they moved to the annual report. And the period of this exemption was for a period of 3 years, from 31 March 2022 to 2024. And this was to allow Transnet to develop and implement internal control measures in ensuring accurate and complete reporting of irregular and fraudulent expenditure. So this exemption is also the result why Transnet moved from a qualified opinion in the previous year to unqualified in the current year, because previously they were qualified in the completeness of the irregular expenditure. Now when this disclosure is moved from the financial statements, it is outside the space of an audit opinion for financial statements. Hence, the audit opinion needed to was changed as well. However, we want to note, by including this thing here, I want to note that the entity is continuing to experience instances of non-compliance. As was noted, they still have non-compliance in the space of procurement contract management, which results in a regular expenditure. And it is important for Transnet management and accounting authority to monitor progress in this regard to ensure that the internal controls are strengthened by the time the exemption expires. So we don't want to just have an exemption that only suspends the qualification and after 3 years the qualification is back. We are saying the Minister of Finance granted that exemption to give space for Transnet to stabilize there and strengthen the internal controls so that by the end of March 2024, when they bring back the disclosure, now the disclosure is no longer qualified. So, and the controls have to be strengthened. That is why we're bringing this particular message in here. With regard to DPE and Safcall, we're saying these two entities must be relentless in the implementation of the audit action plans to prevent reoccurrence of this non-compliance, because it is very possible for these two entities to move into the space of pre-audit. Just looking at the areas that or the type of non-compliance that were identified at these entities on the space of procurement, both DPE and Transnet had non-compliance relating to uncompetitive and unfair procurement processes. Transnet, we identified an award of 1 million rand that was awarded to a company that is connected to a close family member or partner or associate of people working in Transnet. And when we identify such non-compliance, we notify management for them to investigate. And these are some of the things that they will investigate, and we then look forward to the outcome of the investigation. And then we remember in this slide, we indicated that Transnet was struggling with record keeping. This links now to the 243 million rand worth of transactions that we could not audit, because the limitations were limited, it was a document not available. And we say there's a need for intervention around Transnet to strengthen the record keeping controls. Again, it links again with the previous slide we were talking about, but during the period of this exemption, Transnet needs to be very relentless and deliberate around improving their internal controls around procurement. This lecture is just checking the instances of irregular expenditure, a significant drop in the irregular expenditure in the current year Transnet, which is still the biggest contributor, only disclosed irregular expenditure of 1.1 billion rand. Previously, it was a lot of money sitting in the hundreds of billions. So now it has drastically reduced. You will also remember that another 5 billion rand also included irregular expenditure from ESCOM. So that, now that ESCOM is not included in the outcome for current year because it's still outstanding, and the figures went down drastically. So moving into the space, Honorable Chair, of the recommendations, it is important again to re-emphasize the message around the accountability ecosystem, that we all have a role to play. And we are making a call to action, not only by the auditors, not only the management, by all role players in the ecosystem, the executive authority and the oversight bodies, including the parliamentary committees and the committees of NCT, to ensure that there is a culture of accountability. Everyone has been appointed and is being paid to do their job, and they must be held accountable for that which they've been appointed to do. And that will only be possible if we drive this culture of accountability that is going to improve service delivery. And we believe as the AGSA that service delivery can only be improved or enabled by capable, cooperative, accountable, and responsive institutions which deliver in their mandates. So those are some of that's the message that we're leaving at high level. And as part of that call to action, the recommendations that we're leaving with the Select Committee Chair, these are listed in here, and we're recommending that the committee follow up with the executive authority and accounting authorities of these entities, or accounting office of the department, on this matter that we've listed. One is that the DPE's annual performance plan must be aligned to the MTSF targets to strengthen governance and ensure stability within the these SOEs. The key indicators and targets of the department must include outcome or output-based indicators which will see improvement in the state-owned entities from year to year. That's the first item that we are recommending that the committee follow up on with the authority and the accounting office of DPE. Monitoring progress on achievement of the MTSF target priorities, and it also links to the first one in terms of monitoring the APP targets, progress reports, a strategic priority, to say that which we have promised as government, how far are we doing around that in line with the MTSF target that we've set for ourselves. There's also a need to follow up on the remedial steps which are being taken to improve performance on the strategic approaches relating to the core mandates of SOEs. And this, we're advising that they be submitted regularly to the committee to enable the committee to perform its oversight mandate in this. There's also an urgent need to finalize and implement the SOE reforms. This one I talked to the message that I spoke about in the previous few slides. This SOE reform, because government is the one that announced them, then we need to follow up with government. How far are you the pace of implementing those ones? And these reforms will ensure policy certainty and stability and empower the SOEs to attract investment and also attract skills to be able to deliver on their own mandate. The failure to submit financial statements, especially by DNEL and the other SOEs, it's a contravention of the PFMA, as we indicated, and there needs to be decisive action to ensure that these state-owned companies submit these financial statements. What decisive actions, it depends on the decision of the oversight structures on that. And as we indicated, that there's a need to stabilize DNEL to ensure that it is functional enough to be able to support the local defense industry and also the Department of Defense in their constitutional mandate. Transverse action plan in strengthening the compliance management, internal controls to eliminate the instances of irregular expenditure requires to be monitored as well. They need to also bring themselves to the commissions of what is it that they are doing in line with the exemption, to ensure that by the end of 2024, when the exemption expires, they have stabilized their internal controls. And finally, transverse liquidity and the financial health of the community needs to be monitored closely, and attention is to be given there. Monitoring plans to address core operational challenges should be prioritized to ensure that transverse achieves its core mandate in future sustainability. Honorable Chair, this is the message that we planned to share with the committee today. But before I hand over back to you, I just want to check with the colleagues with me if there's anything that they want to clarify or add. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Kumo. I think from my side that you've presented to the committee. I think at this stage, Honourable Chair, maybe we can hand over to yourself and to the Honourable Members if there are any reflections on the presentation that we've made, and we can maybe, after taking those reflections, also provide some additional comments based on what the committee would maybe want clarified or questions that they might have. Thanks, Chair. I would hand over back to you.
No, thank you so much to you, Office of the AG, for this presentation. And I'm now going to ask the members maybe to make their comments and ask questions and even make suggestions where they feel like they would want to come up with some proposed solutions to some of the challenges that you have lifted in this presentation. Members, there it is. If the members can raise their hands, and then I will note them as I see the hands on the platform. At this stage, I see the hand of Honourable Arnold, and there's also the hand of Honourable Bibi, the hand of Honourable Wenya. In that order, Honourable Members, those three members are the only ones that have raised their hands. Honourable Arnold, I now give you the opportunity to put your questions across.
Thank you, Chairperson. Apology for not putting on my video due to load shedding that I have here. Chairperson, yes, let me take this opportunity to thank the Office of the Auditor General for the briefing and express appreciation for the work done by the AG. And we as a committee, we totally agree that a culture of accountability will improve service delivery, and that as a committee we must continue to perform our oversight responsibility. Just in terms of the Public Audit Act of 2004, no person must interfere or hinder the AG when it comes to exercising or carrying out mandated duties. It's actually an offense when such occurred. If we can get a sense, Chairperson, of interference or hinderness, or was the AG, the Office of the AG, allowed to do the work freely in terms of the audit responsibilities. Then, Chairperson, there has also been a number of acts of intimidation against staff members during the previous and audit cycle years. Were there any such kind of intimidation and threats coming from maybe the department or its entities? We just want to hear if there were any. Then, Chairperson, we can again raise our concern with the outstanding financial statements, which is in contravention of the PFMA and the Companies Act. So that is a concern, and that is a matter that needs urgent attention. Then the impact assessment of irregular expenditure occurred from 2018 till 2022 financial year. We can see there is a reduction, but it's shockingly high in terms of the 1.2 billion. I think that needs also attention. Then if the Office of the AG can just give us a sense in terms of the expanded mandate when accounting officers does not deal with material irregularities. And how does this now further strengthen your mandate? And then, Chairperson, just a comment on the prevention of reoccurrence of non-compliance, which is very important, and there the Department of Public Enterprises and SAFCO, in terms of the implementation of the audit action plans, so that they don't reoccur, so that there is no reoccurrence of non-compliance. That's from my side, Chairperson. Thank you.
Honorable Bibi, thank you, Honorable Anoz. I now give the opportunity to Honorable Linwe Bibi. Honorable One.
Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson. Greetings to you and the colleagues and also the team from the H's office. I will also say that thanks for the presentation. Of course, we could see that there's improvement in some of the entities. Keep it up the good work. It was very impressive. Chairperson, I've just got two questions from the team. Does the Auditor General have any statutory powers in case where SOCs ignore the AG's recommendations and undertake more remedial actions? Now, can you sanction them in any way? And the second question, Chairperson, is that I've noted with the presentation that you haven't said anything about boards or board members' responsibilities. Do you think is it fair for a board member to sit in 20 boards, and also that of SOCs, the number of boards board members should sit on should kept in a reasonable minimum? I just want that clarity, Chairperson, because I think we did ask those questions from the previous presentations, checking on the boards, really, one member attending more than, 10 boards or 20. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Those were my two questions.
Sometimes without board transactions, I feel from this.
Siyabonga mama.
Thanks mama.
Bona kakhulu. Asiphele umamungwenya. Simnika zimboko. Sikuwe.
Okay.
Bona umungwenya.
Thanks very much, Chen. For recognizing me. And let me take this opportunity to acknowledge everyone
who has been Eric Boscat, my brother, please, you are disturbing us. Continue, Honorable Mwenya.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson, for recognizing me, and let me take this opportunity to acknowledge everyone present in the meeting. My question to the Audit General are as follows. The first question is on Public Audit Act. The Audit General is empowered by the Public Audit Act to take corrective and remedial action against accounting officers who failed to comply with the law. Now, Chair, my question is, based on the audit outcome, which were released by the Audit General on state-owned companies, were there any remedial and corrective action which were issued against those who have failed to comply with law? If yes, which state-owned companies were used with corrective action in a form of the certificate of debt, and if no, why not? The second question, Chairperson, I want to know that is on recommendation of the Audit General. I would like to ask whether the Audit General has any mechanism in place to ensure that the Department of Public Enterprise implement the recommendation of the AG. Third question, Chair, is on failure to submit financial statement for auditing. The failure to... Can I continue, Chair?
I really don't know. Eric, I'm not sure what is happening with you. Can you please switch off your microphone? Sorry, Mama. Sorry for that. I'm really regret what is happening here. Continue.
Thanks, Chair. It's disturbing me, and it's disturbing also even the presentation on the person that gave us the presentation, because they must answer this question. But if he doesn't hear me, how is he going to answer this question, Chair? The third question is on failure of submission financial statement for auditing. The failure of submission financial statement by the department and the state-owned companies is a serious concern, Chairperson. I want you to find out from the AG what needs to be done to prevent this non-compliance with the law not to happen at all. I need to get the input on the AG on this one. Last question, Chair, is the fourth question, which is the last one, is based on oversight information. Can the AG provide the committee with any useful oversight information, which we can use as the committee to strengthen and improve our oversight role of holding the department and state-owned companies accountable? If yes, can that information be sent to the committee for members? Honorable Chair, this is my contribution to the meeting, and I would like you to pause here for now and wait for the answer. Thanks very much, Chairperson.
Asbonge, Mama Kakuru, thank you. We are now going to recognize the other two members who have since raised their hands, Honorable Nana and Honorable Modise, in that order, colleagues. Over to you, Honorable Nana.
Yeah, thank you very much, Panini. And good morning to honorable members.
Can you please open your video? We are on a national television here.
Can you see me, Chair?
Yeah, and they're born. Better come up. Go ahead.
Thanks, Chairman, for the opportunity. And as I said, good morning to the office of the AG. You know, Chair, as I'm listening to the AG, or firstly, let me wholeheartedly appreciate and also join in my colleagues in commending the hard and probably the most hated work that the office of the AG is doing. As I was listening to them presenting, I couldn't help but ask myself a question. What has become of our country? What has become of our country? Many lives were lost. People lost limbs. People sacrificed their youth. People sacrificed their lives for the freedom that we all enjoy today. But what I really ask myself, what could all those people that sacrifice so much for us to call ourselves free today are saying wherever they are? They are probably turning on their graves. The issue of state capture, Duanin, is an indictment and failure of parliament to conduct oversight, is an indictment on us as parliament, particularly the fourth and fifth parliament. Particularly the fourth and fifth parliament. And I really do hope that this is a lesson for us in the sixth parliament and other parliaments coming ahead of us, that we shall not allow parliament to be a spectator in a match it's supposed to be playing. I'm lost for words. Honorable Arnold summarized the situation very well. My only contribution, Chairman, will be to plead with your good self to urgently summon all these affected SOEs to appear before us so that they can provide answers that they have failed to give to the AG. It is completely criminal, Chairman, to have state-owned enterprises failing to comply with the very pieces of legislation that we passed as Parliament. And it cannot be business as usual. My proposal, Chairperson, will be that you call these SOEs as a matter of extreme urgency. And we hold them to account. Thank you very much, Kelly.
Thank you, Honorable Nana. Thank you so much for that contribution. We now give the opportunity to Honorable Modise. Honorable one, the floor is all yours.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me greet my colleagues and also greet the members from Auditor General's office. Chair, firstly, let me commend the report or the presentation from AG. Indeed, they are working very hard to make sure that the funds of our country be taken care of. But unfortunately, the people who are supposed to make sure that they accounted for these funds are doing something else. Chair, my question to Auditor General is, if the board members, particular chairperson and the chairperson of finance, their entity continue getting disclaimer, what is the recommendation from Auditor General? Are they gonna keep quiet, or are they gonna recommend that the very same chairperson or the chairperson of finance, in particular, board, must not be a member of any board because she failed or he failed to do its work, her work or his work. The second one is to the politicians, those who are supposed to do oversight over the department, over the entity. What are you saying about them? Are they doing what they're supposed to do? or they just monitor and say, no, each and every year this entity will get disclaimer. It's okay for them. So those are my two questions, Chair, and really to comment on the Auditor General. We can see the light after the tunnel, to say they are working very hard, but they must keep it up again. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Modisa, for that input and the questions that you have raised. Those are the only hands that I had. I think before we give over to the Office of the Auditor General to respond, I am pretty covered, and I also wish just to express my deep felt gratitude for them, for being so brutal in terms of outlining the truth and mainstreaming the issue of accountability, which is quite very key, because the mandate given to boards and given to these entities are very clear, and the issue of accountability is not an option, but it is a condition. And I think you have correctly emphasized that, and I cannot agree more. But what I want to check with the Office of the Auditor General is that, given the fact that in a particular financial year leading to the one that succeeds, you can clearly see that if an entity is going astray and it is on the verge of crashing, what do you do with your early detection to try and prevent that from happening? Number two, linked to that one, is the issue of the turnaround strategy. I assume that the minute you see that the entity is going to the ground, you should at least come up with an aggressive turnaround strategy, which you must actually ask them to put forward and actually lead them in terms of your expectation. Because where we are now, it is quite surprising that we just hear on the news that we are, for instance, on the verge of losing all our reserves in terms of fuel. Couldn't you detect that 12 months in advance? Why it just happened so sudden that we hear something that is shocking like that? Don't you have an instrument as the AG to see it coming and therefore immediately raise the flag by saying that they must come up with a troubleshooting mechanism to prevent that disaster from happening? Because when one state entity collapses, we as the members of parliament, as lawmakers in the country, we see that as a disaster. We cannot afford to see any of these entities failing, especially if we've got the instruments of state, which amongst others include the good office of the Auditor General. How best can you help us to ensure that we protect and preserve these institutions, because they have a key role in the management of the national question? I can understand with the situation of COVID that flights were grounded, and then those matters might have had an adverse effect in terms of destroying some of the businesses, especially airline and other tourism related ones. So, but I'm saying that under normal circumstances, why can't we prevent some of these things from happening? The other question that I have is that the manner in which we dealt with issues as they relate to South African Airways, and the lessons that we have drawn from that, couldn't we also prevent a similar outcome in relation to South African Express and Mango? Can't you help us there? Because there could be an unhappiness that we see on how the issues of FAA were handled. And we sort of have a sense that this may occur with the Express, South African Express as well as Mango. How can you help us to prevent a repetition of the same, which does not sit well with us? So that will be my own summation. But indeed, I think the members have expressed themselves and appreciate the role that you play. And but we just want to enrich your instrument to have an ability to bite even more in the best interest of securing a good position for the national interest insofar as these institutions are concerned. So I hand over back to you now to answer our questions and provide clarity where clarity is required. Over to you.
So thank you so much, Honorable Chair, and to the Honorable Members for the questions that that have been raised. I think the one point that maybe as we start reflecting on those questions is to agree with the members in terms of the role of ensuring that there is accountability and oversight. And that indeed, in order for us to make sure that the state-owned entities actually deliver on their mandate and ensure that there is a delivery of services to the ordinary South African citizens is dependent on ensuring that everybody is actually playing their part. And in playing their part, we are really reinforcing the culture of accountability. And I think as Pumlani was doing the presentation, one of the areas that he did emphasize on is the role that each and every one of us have to play, from the officials within the departments and the state-owned entities to the board that oversees the state-owned entities, to parliament that oversees and performs oversight and monitoring over these entities, and most importantly, even the executive authority that is responsible for this entity. So it's at the back of this that as we provide some of our reflections on what the committee members have shared, we do so in line with the accountability ecosystem. And maybe as we reflect on the questions that have been raised, it would be important maybe to also categorize them because we are also seeing a theme in terms of the reflections from the committee members. One is in our role as the Auditor General, and the second one is relating to the role that would be played by the oversight by accounting authorities, being the boards of this state-owned entity. And lastly, in terms of as we exercise our extended powers, what is the more that we can do? And maybe let me start with some of the reflections and the team that I'm with today will also add to respond in terms of the questions that have been asked. And maybe where I would want to start is with the questions that were raised by Honorable Arnold around whether when we were actually conducting our audit, whether we did, when we intimidated and were we allowed to do the work that we so need to do in order to ensure that there is this accountability and oversight that we speak about. And I can start by reflecting, Chair, that from our perspective, we cannot say that we have been prevented from doing our work. But what then becomes important is that when we talk around the context of timely submission of financial statements, it does impact our ability to provide the necessary insights that would enable accountability and oversight if the financial statements are not submitted on time. So the need for this entity to submit their financial statements on time actually impedes our function in that we're not able to share our insights in a timely manner. And Chair, in your reflections now, you were asking whether there are early interventions that can be made. And if financial records are not submitted on time, that then impacts our ability to deliver on that particular, on those particular insights to enable those that are responsible for the different functions in this accountability ecosystem to actually play their role. So in simple fact, Chair, how I would maybe respond and characterize that, that question is that although we've not been necessarily intimidated or prevented from doing our work, we certainly realize that the failure for these entities to submit financial statements on time impacts on our role, and equally then would implement would also impact the role of other accountability role players in the cycle. And that is something that needs urgent attention. And that can be done through the accounting authorities. It can be done through the executive authorities in terms of ensuring that there is that engagement that is happening with the management of these entities to ensure that these matters are closed on time and the financial statements are actually done within a reasonable time frame. Chair, some of the questions related to our expanded mandate. And indeed, we have been given extended powers as the Auditor General. And in this extended powers, as Bumrani indicated in his presentation, we have exercised those powers. You will see that we have issued material irregularities in the transit environment. And we have also reflected on what has been impacting the closure of those material irregularities in those environments. What also becomes important, Chair, is the fact that where we have made, where we have identified rather the material irregularities and the accounting authorities have taken the necessary action, that is indeed what we want to see as the Auditor General. In instances where we do indicate the material irregularities and we do notify the accounting officers and authorities and the necessary actions are not taken on a timely basis, the Act does empower us to issue remedial actions. And in some instances, go as far as issuing the certificate of date. In the current portfolio, what we're seeing is that of the ones that we have issued, there is progress that has been made. You would have seen that, as Bumrani was presenting, some of them are already in the disciplinary process stage. But we do urge that urgent attention be given to ensuring that these matters are closed on a timely basis, but also to ensure that from a consequence management perspective, the irregular expenditure and the non-compliance that we're seeing in the space actually be investigated on time. And that will then allow, ensuring that there is the necessary consequence management that is taking place in that regard. So I think what is important to note on this particular point, Chair, is the fact that, yes, we do have the extended powers and yes, we do, where necessary, issue the remedial actions. But the primary responsibility, again referring to the accountability cycle, is that the accounting authority themselves must ensure that where we have identified this matter, the necessary actions are then taken. And if that is not done, then we will then exercise our powers in terms of ensuring that the necessary remedial actions are actually taken. Honorable Arnold also wanted to have a sense of the irregular expenditure that has been incurred in the portfolio and the significant reduction that has been identified in the portfolio. And I think what is important is what was indicated as we were doing the presentation, in that as we're presenting this outcome, there are two things that have impacted the irregular expenditure numbers that we're presenting today. The first one being that the financial statements of ESCOM have not yet been finalized. So as the numbers are presented to the members today, that number for the current year or for the current PFMA cycle is not presented. So that is the context that is necessary in understanding those numbers that we will be presenting. The second part is that as it relates to Transnet, which was one of the biggest contributors of irregular expenditure, we do audit the irregular expenditure that has been incurred. But again, as was emphasized during the presentation, they have an exemption. They have an exemption in terms of the disclosure of that in the annual financial statement, and that is currently sitting in the annual report. Again, as it relates to Transnet, we want to emphasize the need to use the exemption period to ensure that the internal control environment is actually strengthened to ensure that at the time that the exemption ends, the maturity of the control environment is such that there is no non-compliance and the entity is able to report on clean administration as it relates to compliance with laws and regulations. I think, Chair, I would also want to acknowledge the comment that was made around the need for audit action plans and making sure that those audit action plans are effectively monitored. And I think as Murani was doing the presentation, the danger is always the fact that if you don't monitor this action plans and make sure that they are root cause based, there is a risk that there could be regression in audit outcomes. So again, there we want to emphasize the role of the audit committee, the role of the internal audit, the role of the accounting authorities, and the executive authority in monitoring those. And then we also talk about what is it that the committees can do in order to ensure that they monitor this audit action plan. Again, in our recommendations, we do want to encourage the committee to call these entities to come and present their audit action plans that address not only the clean administration as it relates to financial reporting and financial management, but more so around the performance of this entity. And that is where we believe that the committee can add the most value in terms of exercising its oversight function. So I think we do want to emphasize the need for continuous monitoring of this audit action plans. And where you find that there is no progress, then the necessary corrective action should be taken, and that should be done on a timely basis. I think it's important to really emphasize around that point. Chair, you also asked about what is it that we do as the Auditor General. So I want to premise that the response to that in that, first of all, we all have a role to play, and that's the theme that we've been talking about throughout the morning today. And that starts with the accounting, with the officials in the department. And then it follows with the accounting authorities and then to the oversight committees and ourselves as the Auditor General. So the first point of reference is to ensure that the accounting officers and the accounting authorities are actually putting the necessary preventative and detective controls in their own environment. But secondly, as the Auditor General, what we do also do is we do what we call status of records review. And the status of records review is really meant to be an early detection system that looks at areas which could actually trip the department and the SOEs in terms of delivering on their mandate and also on financial management. And as we do this status of records, which is an early audit, we do sensitize them in terms of areas where we believe that corrective action needs to be taken. We do make recommendations in that regard. And that is what we do as the Auditor General. But again, the primary responsibility must lie with the accounting authority to say what is it that is being done in the environment to ensure that these things actually don't happen in the first place, and if they do happen, that the necessary consequence management is then taken against those officials that are found to be in contravention of compliance with legislation. I think, Chair, maybe I can pause here and allow Bumu and the colleagues maybe to come in and address some of the specific points that the members have raised, and then we can then see if there's any clarification that is required again from the members. With your permission, Chair, if I can just allow the team to come in and add to some of the specific responses that you might have asked in the reflection. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madi. Your groupings of matters covered most of the issues that the committee members had raised, according to my notes. There's just one from Honorable Ngwenya about can the AGSA provide committee with useful information that can enable the committee? On this one, I think we are available, Chair, to share with the committee information as and when it's requested. So what we have shared with the committee today is in terms of what we understood would be useful to the committee. And from this presentation, the committee is able to then determine what more that the committee wants from the AGO, which specific information is required, and can write to the AGSA, who will then respond accordingly. Thank you. That's the only one I wanted to touch on. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I don't see any other hands from my colleagues on the line. I think that would be our reflections, Chair, on the matters that have been raised. And I would, with your permission, hand back over to you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Madidimalo and Fumulani, for those responses. Honorable members, I think these responses are quite elaborate, and I think they suffice for now. I have had other suggestions which come directly to the Office of the Chair, and I think we have taken that into account, and indeed it will be considered and processed accordingly, because I think it is only a progressive thing. Allow me, on your behalf, members, unless otherwise members still want to have another bite, I think for me, your questions were quite, they went to town, and the responses are also satisfactory. I never wish, on your behalf, honorable members, to express our appreciation to the Office of the AG. And indeed, we do emphasize the point that they must continue doing the work that they do and consider the proposals that we have put to the table for their consideration to sharpen and enrich their work. And we wish you all the best. And let's join hands in ensuring that we turn our fortunes around in the country, and ensure that this beautiful country, of which President Mandela laid very good foundations for, is actually defended and protected, to ensure that its institutions work like charm. We cannot afford to have the institutions of state at that level to fail. For the whole of the continent of Africa, look up to us as South Africa. Because you know that economically we are a springboard to the rest of the continent. And there's no better economy that is well structured like ours. All what we need to do is to improve the management of this economy to a point of efficacy. And your instrument, being the Auditor General, can help us to realize that objective of ensuring that we improve our lot, and we turn around where we are found wanting, and we think that you've got all what it takes to make this happen and to make us to achieve this goal. With those few words, we wish to say thank you to you, and we release you to go back to your desks so that you can continue doing your work of the nation. Thank you very much.
No,
honorable members. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Sure. You are released. I just wanted to check now from the Secretariat if was there maybe anything like an announcement that you needed to bring to our attention. If not, then I'm going to formally adjourn the meeting. Is there anything, Secretariat, that you would want to announce?
No, Chair, you can close the meeting.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, thank you for making time. I know that you are paid to talk, you are paid to listen, you are paid to make laws and exercise oversight. But still, in the true essence of our Africanity, be that as it may, I have to thank you for your contribution in this meeting in particular, but for executing your duty so efficient and effective. And I think this engagement today with the AG was quite robust, and I think the proposals for solutions that you have put on the table are quite very revolutionary. And we need a revolutionary approach in order to ensure that we take our country to greater heights. And we must not be apologetic in doing that. It is our task as this generation to ensure that we take our country forward, and so that we can better the lives of our people. And these institutions are meant to assist us to realize one thing and one thing only, to better the lives of the majority of our people who still sit in the margins of society in terms of economic benefit and other related matters. Therefore, I can't thank you enough, members. I wish you a wonderful day. You are also allowed to go back to your work. Thank you so much. The meeting is duly adjourned.
Thanks very much, Chair.
Siyabonga, sir.
Siyabonga,
baba.
Amago.
Thank you so much, baba. We enjoyed the meeting.
Thank you.